Well, for those of us on Main Street, our love affair with credit cards seems to be fading. Cards are harder to come by, and credit limits are going down. But as NPR's Martin Kosty reports, some people are turning to alternative forms of credit that may actually cost them more.
You may have noticed the logo on some websites. Instead of paying with a credit card, you're invited to click on Bill Me Later. That's actually the name of a payment company, Bill Me Later. It's used by sites ranging from AirTran to Zappos. Bree Todish discovered it a while ago.
Primarily, I've used it for clothing items and for books.
Bill Me Later takes your name and part of your Social Security number, and then, depending on a credit check, it lends you the money for a single purchase. Todish says when she was shopping online for new clothes for job interviews, the Bill Me Later option clinched the deal.
I was sort of looking at it, you know, a couple different sites for options, and in the end, I ultimately chose the site that had Bill Me Later because at the time, I was pretty short on other funds.
As some people become more reluctant to use credit cards, online merchants are especially worried about losing sales. Marty Keene, VP of e-commerce at a retailer called Bluefly, says Bill Me Later is a must.
It is the one thing that we can offer that says, okay, well, if you don't have a credit card at all, here's an opportunity to still make a purchase.
Bill Me Later charges no interest for the first few weeks, or even the first couple of months, depending on the deal offered by the merchant. So it's essentially a free loan if you pay it back on time.
If you pay exactly on time.
Steve Berman is a lawyer in Seattle.
If you don't, you get surprised by the interest payment and the penalties. And that's where people start complaining.
Berman's law firm has been online collecting those complaints for a lawsuit against Bill Me Later. He says as soon as customers are out of the repayment grace period, they face an interest rate of 20% plus late fees. Berman says one of his clients missed a payment on a $20 purchase and found himself owing $40.
A loan shark would be happy to get 100% of the purchase price.
Berman contends that these fees violate the usury laws of California, the home state of Bill Me Later's parent company, eBay. And he says the company is trying to get around the state rules by using an out-of-state bank, CIT, as a front. He says Bill Me Later's business may be capitalizing on customers who are already in financial trouble.
Now, I wonder if the people who are pushing the buttons Bill Me Later are going to have a more propensity not to pay on time. Because why would you do this? If you got a credit card, just slap it down.
Bill Me Later told NPR that it would not comment on Berman's lawsuit, and it didn't accept an invitation to talk more generally about its product. eBay and CIT did take questions, but did not respond to them. Customer Bree Todish says she's satisfied with Bill Me Later. She says she hardly blinks at the company's interest rate.
A couple years ago, 20%, which is usually what it is, would have seemed very high to me, but now I have credit cards that want to charge me, you know, 24, 25, even up to 28%.
Still, there are other costs to customers like Todish. Borrowing money from Bill Me Later may hurt her credit rating, the effect of multiple credit checks for individual purchases. And she doesn't have the benefit of the consumer protection laws that cover credit card purchases. But those are costs that she says she's willing to pay if it lets her rely a little less on the plastic. Martin Kosty, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
There's big news today out of Major League Baseball. Big news which will not come as a surprise to many people. Mark McGwire admitted that he used steroids. Here's the former single-season home run champion speaking with Bob Costas on the MLB Network.
I wish it never came into my life, but we're sitting here talking about it. And I'm so sorry that I have to. And I apologize to everybody in Major League Baseball. My family, the Marises, Bud Selig. Today was the hardest day of my life.
McGwire is preparing a return to baseball as a hitting coach for the St. Louis Cardinals. NPR's Tom Goldman joins us now. And Tom, tell us a bit more about what Mark McGwire had to say today about the extent and the timing of his steroid use.
Yeah, Melissa. Well, in multiple interviews, including the one we just heard with Bob Costas, Mark McGuire said he used steroids and human growth hormone on and off for about a decade, starting early in his career, which ended in 2001 with his retirement. Most significantly, he says he used steroids during the 1998 season. You'll remember that was the year he had that dramatic duel with Sammy Sosa for the single-season home run record when it captivated the country and really revitalized baseball after a damaging work stoppage several years before. McGuire said in a statement, I wish I had never touched steroids. It was foolish. It was a mistake. I truly apologize. Looking back, I wish I had never played during the steroid era. Interesting thing to say. And he said he hid his usage from everyone. He said he took the banned drugs to overcome injuries and not to get stronger. He told Bob Costas tonight he was always a long ball hitter, you know, but whether he intended it or not, the steroids undoubtedly did help him get stronger. And many will say no, he couldn't have hit all those home runs, 583 in his career, without the steroids.
And the asterisk next to that record. What have been some responses to his admission, Tom? Is anyone saying they were actually shocked to learn that Mark McGuire used steroids?
Not quite that. I think a lot of people were kind of expecting it. Major League Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig, who reveled in that 1998 home run duel I mentioned, Selig released a statement today saying he's pleased that McGuire confronted his use of banned drugs. And Selig also said the steroid era in baseball is clearly a thing of the past, and McGuire's admission is another step in the right direction. McGuire's former manager, Tony La Russa, who managed McGuire in Oakland and then in St. Louis, and really who was around him as much as anyone in baseball, said today on ESPN that he ran a legitimate program in both places and that he didn't know anything about McGuire's drug use until McGuire told him this morning.
This morning, and after 2005, though, Tom, there weren't a whole lot of people in the country who didn't suspect that Mark McGuire was using banned drugs.
Exactly. Well, the congressional hearing in 2005 on steroids in baseball, when McGuire said repeatedly, I'm not here to talk about the past, it was embarrassing and damning. Although today McGuire shed some light on that performance. He said he didn't come clean at the hearing because he said there was no promise of immunity. He was worried about prosecution because of drug use, and he stonewalled to protect his family. He said he wanted to tell the truth.
Now, both Mark McGuire and Commissioner Selig today implied that baseball's drug problems are in the past. Tom, what do you think?
There's tougher testing and fewer positive tests in the major leagues, but Melissa, I know I get a regular release stream of releases from Major League Baseball showing suspensions for powerful steroids, especially from the Latin American minor leagues. The situation may be better, but steroids in baseball is hardly a thing of the past.
That's NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman. Tom, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
You're listening to NPR. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Does this movie sound appealing to you? The main character spends most of his time either skulking on a sidewalk, smoking cigarettes, or questioning the meanings of words. Well, the judges at this year's Cannes International Film Festival thought it was pretty appealing. They gave the movie their jury prize. It's from Romania, and it's called Police Adjective. It opens this month in some American theaters. Howie Moshevitz of Colorado Public Radio asked the director what it's all about.
A young detective struggles with whether or not to arrest three students who've been smoking hashish. He believes their lives will be ruined for a minor crime. The title of the movie is written Police, Adjective, and director Corneliu Porumboiu says the film's a discourse on language and the detective's search for the meaning of such words as conscience, moral, and law.
The movie is built around this concept, and at the end I arrive to the meanings of the words, what is conscience. Because the police have to enforce and to respect the law, which is made by words, and when I start to think this movie, I had the impression that all the time we speak, one with each other, but at the end each one of us has his own representation.
The representation or meaning of each of those words can be determined by whoever speaks them, or they can be taken literally. In a crucial sequence, the young detective's commander, in a soft, patronizing voice, forces him to read dictionary definitions of the words he uses to justify leaving the students alone.
Caută la conștiință.
Look up conscience, the police chief says, and fixes a cold stare while the young detective reads like a child in front of the school principal.
Conștiință, conștiințe, sentiment, intuiție pe care ființa umană o are despre propria existență.
Mai rar.
Cunoașterea intuitivă.
Mai rar să-și înțelegi.
It's a grim, humiliating scene, and the weight of the commander's oppressive logic squashes the young cop's spirit. The joyless feeling is matched by the film's images of the small city of Vishlu, where it takes place, and where director Corneliu Porumboiu grew up. He says Police Adjective was filmed on gray November days using long takes with a stationary camera. There's no music. But Porumboiu rejects the idea that his film is a metaphor for the dull, lingering chill of the former authoritarian regime of Nicolae Ceaușescu. He says that it's just about a cop searching for meaning.
In a way, I'm afraid of metaphor or to generalize, you know. It's this character and he's in a transition period. He doesn't have values. He doesn't have something to grab, you know.
As the commander takes away his words, the young cop looks like he's grabbing for a lifeline, drowning in his own silence. His sense of ethics goes unexpressed. That silence may not be a metaphor, but it does in a way represent the plight of people struggling to escape the legacy of tyranny, says Corina Șuteo. She's director of the Romanian Cultural Institute in New York, a government agency that promotes her country's culture in the United States. She recently organized a festival of new Romanian films.
The question that this film asks is, how much has Romania today? How much do we really get out of long-term legacies of totalitarian thought, of authoritarian way of thinking, of ideologies? How free are we really to get out of it and make also our individual choices inside a society? And for me, this is the film that really points this very, very strongly, and also in a very simple, completely non-sophisticated way. Maybe this is why Corneliu hates to speak about it as a metaphor, because he's just he wants to keep it simple.
That style also characterized Corneliu Porumboiu's critically acclaimed first feature, 1208 East of Bucharest. Corina Șuteo says that Porumboiu's unadorned films reveal perplexing and difficult problems. Both the commander and the detective want to do their jobs well, but they're trapped by the history of their country.
A mind that is captive cannot get rid of this captivity. You become finally the main guard of this captivity. You become the captive and the one who is the guard to the prison. And this is maybe the most dangerous and awful legacy of totalitarian regimes, because you're afraid to get out of this captivity.
Șuteo says that having to live with dual realities is what the great Romanian Dada artists Tristan Tzara and Eugene Ionesco called absurdity, and that Corneliu Porumboiu has entered this absurdist tradition with his observation that words have become meaningless.
I think now we are living in a world which we are making the laws, but in the same time, I think that it's more and more difficult to understand each other.
His characters don't seem to think we can. Director Corneliu Porumboiu is a little more optimistic. For NPR News, I'm Howie Moshevitz.